Filmmaker Commentary, episode 94.
Welcome to Filmmaker Commentary, where we give you insights from our favorite filmmaking commentaries. These commentaries can be heard on your DVD and Blu-rays of your favorite movies. We'll show you how you can use these commentaries and apply them to improve your video production and filmmaking techniques. All of this here on Filmmaker Commentary. I'm your host, Reginald Titus Jr.
Thank you for tuning in to Filmmaker Commentary. I'm Reginald Titus Jr. I'm joined with
Casey G. Smith.
Welcome back, sir.
Good to be back, sir.
And today we are talking about The Evil Dead, directed and written by Sam Raimi. Can you talk about what's going on, our special edition?
Yes, we want to welcome you to our third annual Halloween block of movies that we're going to be covering here on Filmmaker Commentary. We've got some fun horror flicks lined up, of course, with commentary for you.
Yes.
In between, we might be throwing in some other films along the way and just kind of taking some episodes that we have recorded in advance, but we want to make sure we gave you some of the Halloween October goodness. So we're kind of going to change the order around of some of those earlier pre-recorded episodes. So just giving you a heads up on that just to be prepared and stay tuned.
Yes, indeed. And for The Evil Dead, this was what, 1981?
81 when it dropped.
And the budget we have of $350,000. And what was that box office looking like?
So according to IMDb, they're giving a total worldwide box office. Well, let's go gross first. Gross box office of $2.4 million and a worldwide box office total of $2.89 million. Now, we want to maybe potentially put an asterisk by this just based upon what we'll talk about in the commentary a little bit later as far as these numbers go, because we think that they may have made maybe more in the worldwide box office, which at this point in time, when this was in the box offices, they may not have been tabulating or counting worldwide box office as accurately as they do now. So we'll put an asterisk by that number.
Yeah, and we see that quite a bit with these 70s and 80s movies.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Where did the money go?
Yes.
But until then, let's talk about news and movies watched.
So in the news, Deadline is reporting that from actress Sienna Miller, who was a co-star in the film 21 Bridges, which also starred Chadwick Boseman, she shared a very touching story that Chadwick, also being one of the producers of the film, actually helped increase her salary by actually taking from his own. She said in a recent interview, remembering the generosity and great soul of the late actor Chadwick Boseman, Sienna Miller, who starred with him in last summer's cop action pick 21 Bridges, tells UK's Empire magazine that the actor slash producer of the movie gave up part of his salary so that the actress could get paid her asking price of $33 million by STX Production.
She was going to get paid $33
million? Yeah, that's what the numbers say. And she was actually a big part of why she was pushing for a certain amount is because she was also looking to take some time off to, spend time with her family as well. So she needed to kind of film a bit of a bigger payout so she could take some downtime.
Interesting.
Yeah, Chadwick, you know, helped make it happen. So just another heartwarming tale of just, you know, the real life superhero.
That's very interesting.
That was Chadwick Boseman. Also, another little tidbit just in the news.
It seems like a lot because, like, the budget. What was the budget for that film? Like 50?
That's a good question. That's a good question. There is also, what are we looking at here? Avatar. Yes. James Cameron's Avatar. And the next two films. The next two sequels are close to finish wrapping principal photography in New Zealand. So Avatar 2 and 3. Yay.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't have any excitement for this. Now, again, I always say this. I could eat my words. Again, it's difficult to bet against James Cameron. He has a reputation of proving everybody wrong.
Yes.
So I didn't. The first Avatar doesn't really do much of anything for me, so that's why I'm like, that's why I'm not excited for a sequel. But hey, I hope it does well. I hope it comes out and changes my mind. You know, because at the end of the day, we want to have good, you know, movie viewing experiences.
So
I mean, we hope it does well. But at this point, you know, I need to see a trailer and maybe our minds will change.
Yeah. A lot of time has passed since the first one.
A whole lot of time.
I remember being blown away by the first one through the 3D, but that's about it.
Yeah. And then lastly, just from a box office standpoint, so Christopher Nolan's Tenet has passed the $280 million box office mark worldwide. So still moving along, doing very well overseas and, you know, kind of limping along stateside.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a little bit of the news.
The news. The budget for 21 Bridges was $33 million. That was a production budget.
Let's see.
Just so we can get the right number. I was like, who is she?
Okay, I'm sorry. I misread that last part. All right, so let me read that. Thank you for catching that,
Redmond. Yes, sir.
All right, so let me back up. So in the news, actress Sienna Miller, who co-starred alongside Chadwick Boseman in the cop thriller 21 Bridges, in a recent interview with Empire Magazine, said that the actor producer of the movie gave up part of his salary so that the actress could get paid her asking price on the $33 million STX production.
Oh.
There we go.
Okay. Did they disclose how much they made? It's always interesting to me sometimes when people kind of complain about like someone making more than them and all that, I always wonder, like, you know, how this information being passed on, how do they get that information? Or, you know, is a line producer kind of letting them know, like, hey man, this is what's going down? It's not like these numbers are really hidden.
Yeah, so she said that I asked for a number that the studio wouldn't get to, says Miller, who was looking to take a break as her daughter was starting school. Mm. The actress told herself, I'll do it if I'm compensated in the right way. And Chadwick ended up donating some of his salary to get me to the number that I asked for. He said that that was what I deserved to be paid.
All right. What's the number?
Man, you can get all them in your pockets.
Yeah.
What you got here? What you holding?
Yeah, for real. They show the budget, $33 million. They made $49 million at the box office, so.
Yeah, was not a winner.
Nah, when I saw the trailer, I was like, I'll wait.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it yet.
Sorry about that.
Hey, you know, they can't all be winners.
That's true.
They don't say how much he made.
No worries. TV, movies, anything? I haven't really been watching much. I watch some sports here and there, but yeah, it's been a busy week, but not for media for me. What about yourself?
I finally finished up the sixth and final season of Community. Man, I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it so much. Fantastic show. And came across a revelation. Of course, you had your run of Rick and Morty over the past couple of weeks, months.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was watching an episode, there was a kind of a random animated character that showed up, but the voice was just like that of Morty. And I was like, wait a minute. And after watching episode after episode, the beginning of every episode, it says created by Dan Harmon.
Yeah.
And the more and more I was skipping the intro after a while, and I'm seeing the name. I'm like, wait a minute. And IMDb, I'm like, son of a gun.
Right under your nose.
Same creator, Dan Harmon. You like Community and Rick and Morty. So, yeah, there you go. So, but it makes sense. All of a sudden, it connects because both shows play on tropes and variations of so much of existing media.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think if you ever get around to Community, I wholeheartedly believe you will enjoy it. And there is one episode in particular, it's played in the sixth season, that I did not see coming. And it played off one of my favorite cartoons. I mean, because they'll change the style. They'll go stop motion, they'll go animated. This is a full-blown animated episode.
Whoa.
And it was hitting all the tropes of this classic cartoon, even brought in some of the original voice actors.
Oh.
I was like, are you kidding me right now?
Okay.
Yeah, but that's all I'll say. But yeah, so I finished Community. I've been keeping up with The Boys, so I watched episode 6.
I think I'm still on 3. Okay. I need to catch up. Is it good? Is it getting good?
I've been enjoying it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Homelander's still crazy as all get out.
Nuts.
Oh, he's a psycho. Terrifying. Again, people love to play with the Superman going bad trope. It's truly terrifying. Like, you'd be screwed.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you'd be screwed. Episode 6.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some stuff that goes down.
I need to catch up.
Yes, sir. Then also something that I watched, I don't think I hadn't mentioned, but a couple of weeks ago, I feel like I'm in a weird time warp.
This is a time warp.
But literally, as of this recording...
Yeah.
A few weeks ago.
Okay.
I watched on the DC Universe app. Yes, still a thing, Reginald. Still a thing.
Do you have to pay for that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I pay monthly. But it is on the decline. I don't know. AT&T, Warner Brothers, I mean, they don't quite know what they're gonna do with it because so much is going to HBO Max.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're gonna do, but yeah. But I was able to watch Justice League Dark Apocalypse War, and it was dark. My goodness, it's actually rated R.
Oh, okay.
It's
I think I'll sign up for that.
Yeah, they go in.
And what's the RoboCop? I'll pay a dollar for that. What do you say? I forgot.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, there you go. My brain isn't working.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
But no, it's dark.
Is
man.
It really?
Yeah. But I mean, I like that DC will go super dark with their stuff. The Flashpoint Paradox is still one of my favorite animated features that DC has done. And that one, I mean, it's PG-13, but that one could have been rated R because There's a whole lot of death in that one. But this film is like a culmination of all the films that they've been doing since the Flash. I didn't realize that, but the Flashpoint Paradox literally kicked off a different universe.
Okay.
And then this film is like is the culmination of it. I was like, oh man, that's cool how they put a cap on that. Mm-hmm. Like, huh. So, but yeah, man, not for the children's at all, but yeah, some very fascinating storytelling. And again, characters from the different films they've done from Justice League Dark, they pulled it all in from the different Batman ones they've done with Damian mm-hmm. Wayne and all that kind of stuff. They brought it all together and they go for it. So yeah, Justice League Dark on the DC Universe app, still a thing.
Rated R.
That's the tag. Rated R.
For real. You need something to get these people to buy. How much is a subscription?
It's like $7.
Okay.
It's like $7 a month.
Okay.
And you get access to the comic books too. It's a digital comic book library. So okay. it's like my Marvel Universe app and Disney Plus.
Okay.
Like together. So, okay. You know, when you talk DC, that means it's not just Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. That's also like Jim Lee's Wildcats because they're under that. They're under DC, under the Wildstorm. That's like Masters of the Universe. They fall underneath that. Milestone is coming back. That's what I'm super excited about, man. You know, Milestone imprint, like mm-hmm. they announced a couple weeks ago, they're coming back. So we're going to get to see, you know, again, for those that don't know, Milestone Comics was a minority owned and driven imprint. So Dwayne McDuffie, Dennis
Sounds
Cowan.
Like a documentary waiting to happen.
Well, there actually is a documentary.
Okay.
On like just black like comic book
and they were
heroes
part of that
and
one?
Characters. They definitely are going to be in it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely going to be in it. But also on AMC,
mm-hmm.
Robert Kirkman did a docuseries called The Secret Origins.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole episode dedicated to Milestone. Okay. There's a whole episode on Image Comics, but the Milestone one is
I'm gonna check that one out.
Really good.
Because I enjoyed the I think Sci-Fi put together a little documentary talking about Image Comics.
Yeah. Sci-Fi's really good at that. Like their YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got loads of docuseries on different comic creators. John mm-hmm. Burns, they go in on Milestone as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
Their YouTube channel.
I like their work.
Yeah, they got some good stuff. But yeah. So that's what I've been on.
And what's today?
What is today?
Where am I?
Oh man.
And today's show is sponsored by
Natural Hair, the movie by Grind of a Matter Films, available for purchase and rent on Amazon Prime Video Service and Video On Demand. Please watch and leave a review.
Let's jump back into the show. Thank you for tuning in. We're talking about The Evil Dead, directed and written by Sam Raimi. This is 1981, successful independent film. Let's go into the synopsis. Ashley Williams, aka Ash, his girlfriend and three pals hike into the woods to a cabin for a fun night away. They find an old book, the Necronomicon, whose text reawakens the dead when it's read out loud. The friends inadvertently release a flood of evil and must fight for their lives or become one of the evil dead. Ash watches his friends become possessed and must make a difficult decision before daybreak to save his own life. The Evil Dead. Rated R. How did you watch this film?
Ooh, so I actually watched the sequel first.
Oh. Okay.
I may have been, I think maybe in like middle school, junior high.
Okay.
I happened to catch maybe like halfway through the sequel, not even knowing it was a sequel.
Yeah.
I was like, just, what is this? What is going on? There's like, you know, this blotting. I'm like, what in God's name? And I was big into horror then. And I thought it was pretty cool. And then I kind of got interested in it. But again, this is before the days of the internet. So information about films was not easy to find.
True.
I mean, like truly, like if you didn't go to a specific like magazine source, where else were you going to get information about a film, or to even know if this is the original, is there a prequel? Like
it's like Alien and Aliens,
which again, that's another thing. I think I saw Aliens before I saw Alien. Mm-hmm. So I saw the sequel first, and then it wasn't until literally maybe like 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was on a kick with Netflix. I was just renting the actual physical, you know, DVDs, Blu-rays, because I wanted to, you know, watch them and then watch all the features, sometimes listen to commentary. And I finally said, oh, Evil Dead. Evil Dead 2. And then I knew about the third one, Army of Darkness, which I'd always wanted to say. It's like, you know what, let me just, you know, rock out this trilogy. So rented Evil Dead, watched that. I was like, oh, wow, this is older, you know. but I was like, Okay, and again, also beginning to understand the style of Sam Raimi as well, in that combination of horror with little tropes of comedy kind of mixed in, like that becomes a staple for him. But yeah, so that's when I first watched. This is my second time watching The Evil Dead.
The Evil Dead.
How about you?
So you watched it when you was a child, and then you watched it
Sequel as a child, and then I finally watched the original.
Got it.
And the sequel as an adult. Really the whole trilogy, honestly. Okay.
Okay. I've never seen this film.
I've never seen it. Who is that man?
Yeah.
I don't recognize him.
Never. But like the image, I've seen the image of the key art. That's like iconic. But never had the want. Just this lady coming out the dirt and the arm coming. It's like, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this time around, got the Blu-ray, which is the two disc, which is Evil Dead 1 and Evil Dead 2. Yeah, that's my first experience. And I watched it with the wife, and this was kind of, because it's on Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix. So for whatever reason, when we played on our Blu-ray, it shows like you can watch the original version or watch it enhanced.
Okay. Yeah, so the one point whatever version.
Yeah. So it looks like they kind of restored it, trying to get rid of some of the grain and stuff like that. But it kept stopping for whatever reason on enhanced version. So we ended up just watching on Netflix, and then Netflix, I think, is the original version because it's like the audio is low. It's almost
the audio was low even on the version that I watched.
It was. Okay.
I was like, I had to, you know, try to, you know, turn it up some more, and I was like, It's a little low.
Yeah, it was. And so I was like, oh, God. But, yeah, this was an interesting experience. But it kept us up, you know, kept us up. But it was more, I can go to what I liked or didn't like, you know what I mean? What I, maybe, I accepted the film for what it was. To me, it felt like a student film. That's what it felt like to
me. This was their first major, this was Sam Raimi's, this is like their first, yeah.
Me knowing nothing about these people. Mm-hmm. I put it in, I was like, this feels like a student film. That's what it feels like. They just, instead of just doing a short, they just went on and just did the whole thing. That's what it felt like, because some of the settings, it just, yeah, it seemed like some, from a technical standpoint, things weren't right.
Sure.
And but I was like, all right. And then, so I just accepted that. But then also from like a continuity standpoint, like some of the rules, like regarding like the Necronomicon, like
Book of the Dead.
Yeah, Book of the Dead. Like some of those rules and, you know, like, yeah, some of the rules weren't really laid out for me to truly understand. So I was just like, okay, I'll just roll with this. I don't know what's going on, but let's just go. They're possessed.
End of the day.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're possessed. But like, you know, do you dismember? Why did lady bite her own arm? You know, it was like, I got a lot of questions.
Fair enough.
Accepting it for what it was just entertaining.
Yeah. It's so fascinating that it goes from, you know, there's like 20 minutes of build up, you know, kind of the spookiest thing that happens is the girl is, you know, his sister is in her room drawing, and all of a sudden her hand just gets like taken over, and all of a sudden it's literally drawing the book.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, is that before or after they hear the sounds in the cellar and they end up going down to retrieve the items?
I think it might be before.
Yeah, I think that is before. It was pretty early on, but yeah, I watched it after I'd seen the sequel, which the production value is much higher, and this has no behind the scenes. The sequel, dude, is loaded. I remember that. I was like, oh man, they got it loaded. I mean, they documented this thing.
Interesting.
Like, it's loaded with features.
We might need to go into Evil Dead too.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. I'm saying, like, it's like that. That I was hoping that this would have that in my mind. I thought maybe that it did, but I mean, this was literally their first film, and like just from like a guerrilla filmmaking standpoint, it's like, man, okay, you know, it's one of those things. Like, hey. Kudos to you guys. You got it made. And when you listen to the commentary, well, I like the commentary because from a business standpoint, most of the time this commentary, they're talking about the business, of how they got through. So as a filmmaker, from a business standpoint, especially if you're a first time filmmaker, I think there's a lot of, nuggets you can get out of this. They mentioned some very specific things like having those are tips we can get into later. But anyway.
Yeah, but since you're talking about the commentary, I mean, was it December 14th when they recorded? Was it December 14th, November? I know it was 2009.
And I didn't catch the date.
Yeah, he just like dropped the date. And I want to say December 14th, 2009. So like that's how it opens up, the commentary. And it's the director and two producers, right?
Well, it's Sam Raimi. Mm-hmm. It's also the producer, Rob Tappert Tappert. And it's also the actor / producer, Bruce Campbell. So the one who plays Ash.
I can dig it.
Yeah, he's the actual producer on the project. Mm-hmm. And again, in this character for him, I mean, that's what he's known for.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've seen his face for the third one.
Army of Darkness?
Yeah, I've seen his face everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, like, he still has that strong chin. And
oh, yeah.
So I was like, okay, I've seen his face.
This is a series also on Stars, Ash versus Evil Dead. And I watched maybe the first season of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has maybe up to, like, 3 seasons worth.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, this as a franchise, as an IP, it's got its fans for sure. But yeah, the sequel definitely like it flushes out more of what kind of Sam Raimi does again.
Okay,
the horror and kind of comedic elements kind of mixed in, but the production
he's kind of finding his voice and he has more money.
Yeah, there is that, and the production value definitely goes up. So I'm really looking forward to.
Okay.
To looking at it again. Again, I'm not going to vouch for the quality. You'll take whatever you take from it, but
yeah, and I agree as far as like from a filmmaking standpoint, this is This is gold for filmmakers. Because that's all they're talking about. Because they're not talking about any scenes or anything.
They're not.
They're disregarding the film. They're just what you're watching. Whereas, like, you listen to Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's telling you frame by frame what's going on.
Yeah. This is why I was running right here. And I'm going to punch that guy right there. I cut my glass. My hand on the glass right there.
Yeah.
And this is what they're trying to figure out what I'm doing. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing over here.
Different style. Different style, but I really enjoyed this commentary.
Nice.
Especially the business, because the business is never really discussed. Well, most commentaries will make this commentary unique because they're talking about business, like the details. And you hardly ever hear that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't realize that Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, the way they talk, clearly, like they sound like they all know each other from college.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like they know each other maybe from high school.
Even. Yeah, you're right.
Like they've known each other a really long time.
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you just hear about the different roles they take on, like Bruce Campbell becoming the music editor.
Yeah.
On this, and like this film was technically made in the late 70s.
Yeah,
going into the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, by the time they took probably 7-8 months or whatever with editing and still raising some more funds, and then going and finding out how to get and do the international distribution, mm-hmm. and getting their pieces ready for that. So, you know, you hear about, you know, Bruce Campbell, you know, having to try to match up cues and these guys went to, you know, I guess they were all in film school,
right,
together. Yeah, it was fascinating. I was like, man, this is really interesting. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, you talk about just guerrilla filmmaking.
Yeah,
I mean,
talking for real.
The white contacts and somebody's dirty hands having to put that. Yuck. Oh, man.
Yuck. Tone. What kind of tone did you get from this film?
Horror comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is less comedic. It's more like just straight horror.
Yeah.
But as you get later on, there's, you know, the sequels incorporate more humor, but yeah, this is, I mean, it's a horror film. And I'm trying to think of, based on the time this came out, like any other films that were incorporating the whole cabin in the woods kind of thing, or is this one of the first ones?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking the first Friday the 13th would have come out,
because the vibe of this, if you watch Cabin Fever, it's like some of the same tropes from Cabin Fever, from Eli Roth's film.
Oh yeah.
And you know, just paying homage to these early horror films.
Likewise, Cabin in the Woods, the Josh
one.
Whedon.
That was pretty good.
No, you haven't?
Nope.
Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
Check that.
All out. Of these horror movies dealing with a cabin in the woods, like that's like in real life, probably not the first place I'm gonna go vacation.
No. No. That's no. You don't go to a cabin in the woods that you've never been to before.
Yeah.
You don't go with just friends.
Yeah.
Maybe you can go with family.
Yeah.
Maybe a black family. You know. Because I'm like, you don't see like a black family go like camping in the woods and then everybody's taking out. No. Nah. So you go during the day. You scope that place out. It can't be no rundown spot. It can't be too far away from civilization. Yeah, nah. And you don't go with a friend that's a jerk.
Yeah.
That's like a constant practical joker type who's going to laugh in the face of danger.
Yeah. Yeah. He's nuts.
Oh, for real.
The tone is set early. They're looking at an atlas. How about that for history? Looking at a map.
Yeah.
To find out where they're at. On a narrow road, they almost get ran off the road and like some weird people are waving at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then while they're driving, they got to cross this bridge that says enter at your own risk, you know.
And while you're driving, part of the bridge breaks where your tire literally goes through part of the bridge.
Yep.
Nah, son.
That's setting the tone up front.
Like, how do we get back over this thing? Is anybody else going to be passing over this bridge?
They seem unconcerned. That's the thing that kind of bothered me. But, you know, I kind of take into account.
That's
like
the horror trope.
But man, this is like next level. It's like while the wheel is like on the like no girls are yelling or anything, he just looks like, oh, okay, let's continue forward.
It's like that. It's a Geico commercial where they let's go hide in the tool shed. You know?
Oh yeah, I just seen that commercial.
You're in a horror movie. you do stupid things.
All the bad decisions.
Yes, yeah, all of them. Oh, man. No, we should split up. Let's go hide in the tool shed. Oh, man.
Oh, so, yeah, I was like, but you know what? It's a, they're at the time when they made it, they were young guys trying to get their college film completed. So I understand. And I kind of got off the brakes in regards to the script writing. You know what I mean? Because there should be some more stuff for development.
Yeah. And he said this is his first script that, no, not the first script he had ever had to write. Because he did a couple while in school. But like they would say that they're like kind of would just shoot stuff before. And then, yeah, this is definitely, I mean, it's definitely his first feature film.
Yeah.
Right? His first feature film that he ever had to write. So, and even like, I mean, I don't even have any quotes. I have no quotes.
I have just one.
I have no later. Quotes. I'm like,
No. Unquotables.
I don't have any quotes. Just,
What about a style? Did you see like a certain style with this film or?
Man, there's a lot, there's all kinds of different angles. A lot of panning tilt. There's a lot of camera movement in this. A lot of extreme close-ups. Yeah, a lot of extreme close-ups.
Looking at the eyes.
Yeah, and then, you know, the tracking shot kind of emulating the... Oh, man, hold up. I'm sorry. If this is your first time listening to Filmmaker Commentary, there are, and have been, and will be more...
Spoilers.
You've been mid-warned. Yep. My bad. But even as the main demon, the dead, that essence as it's moving along and it, you know, tracks along the ground. There's a lot of camera movement. Again, weird angles where, you know, maybe go upside down or right side up or pan around the room. There's one shot where Ash is in the basement. And he's going to look for his buddy. And as he gets to the bottom of the steps and the camera, you know, that shot. I liked that shot a lot. I was like, I like that. I don't know. I'm like, yeah, okay. You get exactly, you know, what it's supposed to emulate of him actually looking. I'm like, that works for me. That works. And there's a real like kind of cute scene. It's like one of the few moments of like affection, you know, where he's kind of faking like he's asleep and he's got the little gift for his girlfriend and they're going back and forth between their faces. You know, he's faking like he's asleep. And then it plays out again later on, but in a much more, you know, dangerous kind of way where, you know, she's been taken over and now she's outside and it's like his face looks back at her and she's trying to look all innocent, you know, only waiting to, you know, claw the heck out of his leg. But
that was gross.
Yeah, that was gross. But
ouch.
Yeah, those close-ups are abundant.
Yeah, I like the perspective, like whatever this demon thing, like the perspective of that. A lot of smoke.
And that also partially was a go with how cold it was there. Like it was very, very cold. Like sometimes like down in the 30s while they were filming. They said there were some scenes where even inside the cabin, you could maybe see like the actor's breath. So maybe something was hidden by the use of smoke and fog.
A lot of that. So they added to the style. Did you get a theme from this?
Don't go camping. don't go into a... What in the world? Autocorrect.
Theme? Or are you doing tropes or themes?
That's a theme.
Okay.
Don't go camping. It's clear.
Don't go.
Don't go. Don't do it. Don't go into a basement. When you hear all kinds of creaking sounds, stay out.
Wow. That's true. I would put that in tropes too. But as far as me, four themes, only had one, and they say this: they won't let us leave. You know, they kept saying it over and over again, and that becomes true. You know, they're gone, they're dead. Yeah. Most people are dead.
Man,
and even at the end was ambiguous. You know, he's like, he starts yelling, something hits him, and credits. They didn't let him leave. No. So they opened with that, closed with that.
Yeah.
What about tropes, man? What you got?
Oh, yes. Again, young people going off into a cabin to have a good time for the weekend.
No.
That in and of itself is a trope.
Fingers closed by a door or floorboard.
Ooh.
Close up. You see that quite a bit.
Yeah. The jerk brings the doom. So the one guy, again, who's the... You know, happy-go-lucky, don't be this. You know, he's the one that goes down into the basement and...
Let's bring this stuff up. The lone woman in the woods making the wrong decisions. Who's there? Who's there? Nobody does this.
Why are you outside? You hear noises. You go outside by yourself, no weapon, after your hand has already been possessed. What is wrong with you?
Yeah. Who's there? And then goes further out into the woods.
Sorry, it's just me, a demon. You want to come hang out with me in the woods? No? Okay, I'll just be out here. Like, what are you expecting to hear?
Some of those decisions were, I'm like, that's not believable.
Again, in horror. I'm just like, early horror too. Like, these are trouble. We were to watch Friday the 13th or...
It's almost, now I guess, you know, the audience has gotten sophisticated, writing is more sophisticated, but you have to have some kind of mode of pushing them. What's forcing somebody outside? You know, what forced them outside? Because as a woman, they were already kind of scared, you know. And for her, it didn't seem right for her character to just journey out into the woods like that. But someone has a dog, sure, and then they follow, the dog runs away, a person will kind of set aside their fear to go find their dog. And then the audience can kind of accept that.
What if it's also this? What if they are literally being drawn out, like beyond their normal... say senses, that they're being drawn to these places. What if the jerk was kind of drawn to go down there in the first place, you know, and she was, again, she already has some kind of influence going with her hand having literally illustrated the book. So it's partially calling to her. Maybe in that moment, maybe she was the only one who heard those things, and literally it was drawing her out of the protection of the house, right? Like almost like a vampire, right? Let me draw you out here.
It just wasn't communicated through the visual, you know, through the movie wasn't communicated.
That's fair.
I think in the movie The Howling, like when that lady was drawn out, I think she was drawn out by those other wolves or whatever. We're going to believe it a little bit more than they actually illustrated it.
Sure. Yeah, we got very little
story.
Exposition, explanation. The most we have are the recordings, right, of the doctor, he and his wife. And that's really all the exposition. That's it. That's all the exposition that you get. You know, my wife and I, we came up to these cabins and we found this, you know, this book that's based upon, what was it, like a Sumerian text.
Yeah, you got me on that one.
And then they fast forward, you know, and it's like, you know, all right, you know, my wife now, she's, you know, been possessed. I had to, you know, kill her.
That's kind of casual, the way he said it.
The only way is just dismemberment. You got to dismember him. It's like, huh?
So that's the rules.
And then to fast forward to the exact incantation, like, oh, man, come on, man. Come on. The exact incantation that just unleashes hell.
It reminded me of a movie from the 80s called The Gate.
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
An iconic image from that film is a kid holding his hand, and there's an eye in his hand. He gets some glass and stabs the eye.
Oh, man.
There you go. That's iconic.
I think I've seen that.
A lot of people have seen. You had to have seen that one.
I've seen that scene. At minimum, I've seen that scene.
Yes.
Ugh.
It's terrible. That's
eyes not on faces more than two is just disgusting.
So that movie opens up. It's called The Gate because it's like the gateway to hell. They have a rock and roll record and they have to play it backwards. And so he like plays it backwards and it's like a cantation or something like that. And so when he's playing it backwards, the gate to hell opens up in his backyard and that's like the demons come up out of that and all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
So that's what this reminds me of. But I don't know if the gate came, I'm pretty sure the gate came after this film, but it's pretty close.
Whenever I think of hands or eyes and hands, I also think of the Jacksons. Of Jackson 5 fame, and then the Jacksons later on, the Victory album, they had a song called Torture.
Oh, never heard of it.
Yeah, it's like actually a music video and everything. And that's the thing. In the music video,
God dang, there's Jackson.
Yeah, it's a dark one.
God,
it's a dark music. It was after Michael had done Thriller.
Oh Lord,
and so. It's a dark music video, but there's a part where I think it's Randy, like he reaches into something, grabs something, and then all of a sudden he's like, and he's got like an eyeball in his hand.
I think I might have seen that, and that's in a music video.
Yeah,
I think I've seen that.
Torture. Ding, 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 ding.
That should not be a hook. That should not be a hook. Somebody got.
And I just can't fight the feeling. Yeah, even like the lyrics are dark. You know, so yeah, anyway. So yes. Another trope that I saw was you get clear instructions on how to do something, but you try to still go around it. So mm-hmm. again, the doctor gave clear instructions that you have to dismember them.
Yeah.
It's a complete dismemberment. And yet Ash, after you know, his girl gets possessed, instead of cutting her up, no, he tries to, you know, pick her up, take her outside and bury her. And he pays the price. You know, they reimitate the peekaboo kind of looking game.
Lord.
I'm not asleep. I'm dead. I'm not dead. Ha. No, I'm not. Ah, your leg.
Slices that leg up. Pretty nasty.
Yeah, for real.
Another trope, last one for me, is naked lady. You got to throw a naked lady in a horror film.
Was that during the tree?
Yeah.
The tree abuse? And even then, it's actually fairly tame. As far as the nudity itself, it's like fairly tame. Like there's, you know, a couple of shots of the breast, and even briefly with the other girl when she's mm-hmm. in her room, it just kind of just pans by, like pretty mellow. Yeah, there those tropes do remain, especially in that time period. You know, late 70s, early 80s, even the 90s. I mean, heck, I'm sure it's still happening now. But yeah,
the only quote that I had was when that one of the main characters kept playing the incantation. What was it called? The demon lyrics. Whenever he kept playing it, the girl's like, "Turn it off!" And he said she's acting like a 3-year-old. Like, and it's true. Like how she did it was like a child.
Mm.
Turn it off.
Was that Ash's sister? Yeah. She's very, very over the top.
Yeah, the one that was doing the scribbling and drawing.
But she's the first one to get taken though too.
Yes, true.
So it's like
she was solo. You know, she was right. She was
She was the fifth wheel. I'm like, why would you? You know, just with this guy. You know. But this all that almost is a trope as well. The fifth wheel.
There you go.
Right. There's always seems to be somebody that you know isn't there with a significant other. They were like, oh, well, you know, let's just invite you along.
You know?
It's like, is that really fun?
It's not.
I can't get any sleep.
What is it?
So, but yeah, that's a little trips I had.
Okay. We'll move this along a little quicker. Trivia.
Trivia.
Originally called The Book of the Dead.
So young filmmakers often would make horror films as their first film.
Yeah.
And they often would be shown at drive-ins. That was kind of the first market you would attempt to get into. And there were many more smaller markets, smaller
regional
theaters, kind of almost like kind of how pro wrestling was back in the day. You could go and mm-hmm. kind of work almost like a circuit.
To add to that, they would say they'll have like 100 prints and they'll just play in a few different states. And then now everything kind of comes out all at the same time. But of course, it costs more money. But an idea I had would be to try to, you know, be able to be willing to kind of hang out with your film for a little bit longer mm-hmm. and travel with the film, you know, regionally hang out in the area if you can afford it. And you're like, hey, this is Houston week or this is whatever, you know, whatever part of the country.
It's like a tour.
And then just do all of the press in that local area, do that press and then release at the same time. That'd be interesting to kind of travel with your film. Old school.
Old school. Oh, the cabin was made originally from a barn, if I heard them correctly.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. The original cabin.
Oh, and to what you said earlier, the reason that a lot of students, and we even heard this at the American Film Market, but those horror films, it was easy for them to find distribution. And it's exploitation genre, so, I mean, you're getting your blood and guts, you're getting your nudity, you're kind of just, you're throwing all of it in there, and it's easier to distribute. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, even to this day, you know, it's like, hey, because your star is the monster.
That is true. And this overall was a very difficult shoot. When you hear these guys talk about what they went through and, man, stand up trying to guard the cabin and Raimi, you know, sleeping in a cemetery at one point saying, I'm so cold. And his friend coming and putting some blankets on him.
No way.
Using, you know, certain kind of heaters that, inside that they shouldn't have. They could have, you know, died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yeah.
Driving back from Tennessee back to Detroit, like sleep deprived, almost like the 10 days no sleep towards the very end of the principal photography.
Forget that.
just, you know, I've got to keep going. And then afterwards, Bruce Campbell saying when he got back home, he was like, for 2 months, like he was sleeping on, he had a bedroom and a bed, but he was sleeping on the floor. His mom was like, why are you sleeping on the floor? This is how we did it in Tennessee. Well, you're not in Tennessee anymore. It was like he had PTSD from the experience. Oh, man. Like they were kind of like emotionally, mentally kind of jacked. A lot of injuries too.
Possessed, maybe.
Well, one by one.
Turn it off. Turn
off. Child.
Oh, man.
One of my last ones. Nobody wanted the film domestically. It wasn't until they got a deal in the UK that the domestic audience, the domestic distributor, was interested in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for filmmaker tips. Don't listen to naysayers. They had a lot of people telling them, like, you can't have 20 minutes of, what do you say, 20 minutes of just character exposition and then the rest all just horror stuff happening.
Yeah.
I kind of agree, but it like disagree too, because I mean, they've kind of created their own style in doing that. You know, it's just like, hey, just give the people what they want.
Once it turns, it's kind of hard to look away. You're like, okay, whoa, okay. Like, yeah, it just, once it turns, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Nobody, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
It's not going to end well. Filmmakers have to deal with disappointment.
True.
Once you put that, you put your art, your project, your product out there, then, you know, it's at the mercy, if you will, of the audience, of the critics. Rami mentioned that one of his instructors saw was at one of the first screening.
Yeah.
They had like 1,000 people at the screening.
Oh, man.
And one of his professors afterwards was like, did you not learn anything in the class? You can't just go and have all these different kinds of angles. I just went to town on him. He's like, he was like, I was wounded. I was very, very distraught by the comments from my instructor. But hey, look at him now.
They were saying it was hard to cast for a low budget 16 millimeter film. But it seems like this is part of, I don't want to say this like trivia, but just kind of pay attention in the casting department. They use a lot of their friends, mm-hmm. and people they know, especially, you know, there's a little bit of nudity and stuff like that in it. But yeah, so pay attention to your cast, you know, and use your friends if you have to, because it can be difficult when your budget is low. You know, it's hard to get, you know, the talent that you may be hoping to get. So keep that in mind.
Yes. Make a calling card and or a short film to help gain financing for your project. Mm. They shot a short film that they use to show off to help bring the money on board. And they were, I was impressed with the amount that they had raised by the time mm-hmm. they were going into principal photography. They'd had about $85,000.
Mm-hmm.
They'd gotten together, and one came from a guy that Sam ran into while he was getting some film processed. He's had all these reels, and the guy asked, you know, was just asking, hey, what are those for? That's why we were making. And the guy happened to,
yeah, just pitch ready though while he was explaining it.
I was like, that's cool. But yeah, but have something ready to show.
I kind of caught this, actually my wife caught this when they were shooting through the windows. She's like, there's no windows in like the little window panels.
They're no
like,
glass?
Yeah, no glass. No. There's no windows in the windows. there's no. So, yeah, she was saying there's no glass in there. I was like, oh, probably because glare or, you know, I just assumed that's what it might have been for. Cause I was like, okay, that makes sense.
I'm sure with as cold as it was, too, they would have been fogging up or cold and precipitation.
Yeah. They had no control on that one.
Golly, that means it was real cold, man. Yeah. Like, whatever was blowing in was blowing in.
Take out the glass in the windows, and we'll cut down on glare.
Mm.
There's a tip.
This next one's actually, it should have been under trivia, but apparently a lot of well-off Midwestern men in the late 70s were buying lingerie for themselves.
That's random. Like, what would cause that?
I don't know. I don't know, Reginald. But I do not know.
That is trivia.
Yeah, but they. I'm trying to think, like, what was the premise of why they had mentioned it. Maybe it was, when did lingerie even come up for some of the scenes?
Yeah, I totally missed that one.
Yeah, they had mentioned that, I don't know, for somebody that they had worked with or somebody on set, I don't know if somebody filled in. I don't know, but somehow, like some people in the Midwest, whatever, were like, you know, something with lingerie, like men wearing like women's lingerie underneath their clothes, like came up. And then the director, Sam Raimi, said his mom, I guess she's worked at retail or whatever, and she was like, Sam, you would be surprised how many men come into stores, and then, you know, they come in like they're, you know, buying something for a wife or a girlfriend, and it's actually for them. I was like, what? Anyway, that was crazy. But again, this is, you know, late 70s.
I don't even know what that's about.
I don't know.
As a filmmaker, especially independent filmmaker, you have a lot of responsibilities, so you have to be careful. So when be ready in a case of emergency. So you had people that were stepping on nails, you know, they were going through their foot. You had a couple of people falling. You had these contact lenses that that stayed in their eyes too long could actually made harm to people's eyesight. And we've heard about this in just other horror films. I think it was Michael Jackson with the big yellow eyes. Like, those contacts covered up your whole eyeball. And so a lot of people scratched their eyes, scratched their corneas or whatever. It was dangerous.
Especially back then, because these were the hard glass contacts.
Yes.
Ouch. And when you put them in, you could not see. Yeah, so you also had to have extra planning. So whatever movements you were going to have your actors make, you had to clearly have it planned out. They had to, you know, count their steps, whatever the case may be, do the motion, do the movement. And then, you know, whatever was next. And again, like, this was a place that had no latrine. It had no running water. They got water somewhere. I don't know where, but I mean, so people's hands were so dirty hands were putting in contacts into eyes.
That's a no, no. You don't do
that's
that.
That's like, ooh. But again, this is 80. This is 79.
You don't do that.
That's just, yeah. That's
horrible.
Yeah, agreed.
If you go back to Cabin Fever when we did that one, Eli Rafe talks about, with all his experience working as like a PA on a bunch of films, he was prepared for when emergencies happen. So he knew to have an emergency vehicle on, just on the ready to rock and roll. You know, he just knew. And the glass blew up in one of his actor's eyes, and they had to rush him to the emergency room. But he said, if I had not had that experience, I probably would like freaked out, or somebody would have got injured even worse. You know, but being prepared for the emergencies, and people don't really think about that. Like, stuff happens.
But you have all this experience from these other filmmakers, yes, right? You listen to their commentaries like, oh, we won't do that.
Yeah.
We won't do that.
Yes, there you go.
So
thank y'all.
They spent another 3 months filming in a basement. So be aware of the times that you have, and be ready to adapt. Like, they got actually evicted out of the spot they were staying in. And I think they actually had to live in the barn for a little while, the barn / cabin for the film, and then they had to leave that. Had to do some repairs to it, and then they happened to have a friend who was willing to convert part of his basement to emulate the cabin space they needed. In 3 months, they spent down there kind of finishing up the shoot. So,
Lord.
Make friends and be flexible.
One of my last tips, they mentioned like splitting the rights of the film allowed them to kind of pay back their investors, and it actually saved them. So at first they originally thought that like the foreign distributors wouldn't pay them the money, but the foreign distributors actually paid them the money. I think they sold it for like $60,000 to London, if I'm not mistaken. And then the money that the Americans had paid them, they didn't actually see any money back from the American distributor. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Or they didn't see it till later. But overseas is where they made their initial funds, for sure.
That allowed them to pay their investors back, yeah. They said it was like a hit in 1983. It was like number one in video in the UK. Interesting.
That is, because also they learned about why they were getting set for international distribution to make sure that they had stills. So while you shoot your project, make sure you are grabbing stills. Again, they were getting stills both in color and in black and white.
Boom.
So it's to have those as their what they call delivery stills, I think is what they called them.
Okay.
My last tip is learn sound. Mm-hmm. They learned a whole lot about sound, even though they were film students and they had learned some things in school, and they thought they really, really knew. But the guy they worked with on their sound design, they said really just was a like a master and showed them so many things. And even Bruce Campbell, actually, again, was the music editor on this project. So actor, producer, music editor.
Boom. Are we going to go into part two, Evil Dead 2, next time? Or
might as well? I'm down. Okay. Down for Evil Dead 2.
Cool. All right. We'll do that. We'll make that happen. And they can catch us where?
Facebook.com/filmmaker commentary. Also, you can like, subscribe, and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher Radio. You can find him at Reggie Titus Jr. and me at KCGSmith32 on Twitter. We're also on Instagram at Filmmaker Commentary. We would love to hear from you. We thank you so much for your support. If there's a film out there that has commentary that you'd like for us to check out, go ahead and drop us line. No, go ahead and drop us a line. There we go.
Yeah.
Again, we'd love to hear from you. He is at Reginald Titus Jr. That's JR. I'm at KCGSmith32 on Instagram.
Until next time, peace.
Respect.